This podcast touches upon some complex topics. The creators have endeavored to deal with the issues honestly and with the sensitivity they deserve. They have also reached out to all key players for their comments and have sought to present a balanced and factual account. We ask that listeners consider each episode in its full context. They were hopeful, tearful, anxious, furious, self-possessed. They were straight, gay, Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, atheist, all ethnicities, all ages, all genders. They were new to this venue, this crowd. But when they opened their mouths, they found the words.
As soon as we had voted and it was out of our hands, this endless stream of people, mostly women, mostly for us, stood up, patiently waited for their turn and had their say.
These were just members of the public, not members of AWARE. Yeah.
Some we knew, okay. Others were brand new.
Most of them we didn't know, right?
And some of them were so nervous speaking, but you could tell that they were shaking, they were determined to have their say.
No one had seen anything like it in Singapore, before or since. I'm Bharati Jagdish. This is Saga, Episode 11, Extraordinary, Part 2. We've come to the moment in our story where, halfway through AWARE's extraordinary general meeting in 2009, the public took to the floor to speak their minds about the takeover. Of the dozens who spoke that day, some have since passed away or left Singapore. Some we were not able to track down, but we did manage to interview a few people about their experiences at the EGM. In this episode, you'll hear from those individuals, both from 2009 and 10 years later, 2019, plus a few other familiar voices here and there. I'll let them do most of the talking.
My name is Mira. I had been living in Australia. I was studying there, did a bit of work, and was going through university. And then I had come back to Singapore with the goal of going into public relations and communications. I came by myself. It was Saturday morning. A lot of my friends were hungover, so that wasn't going to happen. I was not intending to speak. I actually had been very clearly told by my mom. She was just like, can you just go, just, you know, participate, but, you know, don't attract too much attention, okay? I think as older Singaporean women, I think sometimes as mothers, they worry about their daughters, they worry about us because they don't want us to be pigeonholed or sidelined for being a feminist, because feminism is an assumption that whenever you use the term feminist, people always think you're aggressive. I was 23. I was terrified when I got up there, purely because I was worried from a career perspective that some of these women would be able to come find me later on and make it very difficult for me to grow my position. I was scared for saying the wrong thing and being corrected. I was scared of the fact that every single pair of eyes in that room were going to be trained on me as I spoke. But then when I actually started speaking, I got upset because it was, I still remember looking at their faces and it was disdain. It was complete disdain for me, my position. It was a lack of interest. And I just remember just getting really upset and annoyed. And so I just went up and grabbed the mic. I remember just thinking to myself, why can't someone have the freedom to choose?
Excuse me. Hi. I just wanted to say I'm really nervous. So the one thing that when we saw the PowerPoint just now, you kept on saying that the older wear didn't reach out to the young people. I think you're very wrong. Because the one thing that a lot of you young Singaporeans want today is equality. That is the most basic need, and that's the one thing we have been taught in school, and by our parents, our elders, who we respect. Okay? And most importantly, it is so hard as it is to grow up in Singapore. It's difficult. You have family expectations, you've got grades, you've got schools, you need to be in the right schools. And the fact that our elders and our parents are telling us we cannot even choose who to love, that's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And I'm not saying this as, I don't know, some people might say it. I'm not a raging lesbian, as you put it. But I am a person who believes that everyone has the right to live. And the most important thing is I don't know how you can put it on everyone here and in Singapore to say that they are not allowed to choose what they want to do with their life. It is not right, and it's not right for you to make the decision as an umbrella women's group to say that women, that you're pro-family and pro-life, you also have to be pro-choice. That is the biggest.
Yeah, I'm actually quite floored that I actually said that. I do believe in it. And it's actually funny because that person 10 years ago, I think I still hold true to that perspective from 10 years ago. I've just sharpened the way that I communicate it now. And I think that what I said that 10 years ago actually has driven me to do the work that I do now and to build teams the way that I do now and to engage with people in different ways and to always be open. I decided to go and build She Says Singapore. We're very focused on inspiring and passion and providing women in communications, media, technology, creative, design with a guide on how they can move forward. We're actually in a situation right now where we have so many different women's organizations. There's Singapore Female Founders, there's Tech Ladies, a couple of data organizations. They're all focused on women. I don't want to say that the Aware saga in itself influenced the founders of these organizations to go and build something. But what it did was that it started a conversation about the importance of equal opportunity and about standing up for a belief. My grandmother was really proud. My mom was really proud.
My name is Irene Ahang, and I'm the founder and CEO of a talent agency called Fly Entertainment. And in this company, Fly Entertainment, we represent actors, hosts, a lot of comedians, a lot of award-winning actors and actresses. And that's what I do. Most Singaporeans know me as Rosie from Phua Chu Kang. So I think, yeah, my appearance in Aware must have come as a shock to them. Because not many people at that time get to see me out of the TV, full cup, full hair, full nail. It was a very rare sight. So it was like an arming sighting, you know, rare sighting. No, not Aming. Some white tiger sighting. I've been told that if I don't speak, it's okay. But the minute I speak, my voice is quite distinct and they're like, Irene, you know. So I would say that at the queue, there were people who recognized me. And there's this woman and her friend, and then she saw me, I was like very delighted, right? Because I'm Rosie, right? But I wasn't in Rosie, I was as myself. They're like, very happy. They saw me like later on, speaking up. And when our eyes locked, she just looked away. Then I was like, she must have like, wow, Rosie is here, must be on our side. Then saw me. Then she heard me speak, she must be like, so disappointed. So I think I maybe have lost some fans in that through that event. But people will forget one. It was bungee jumping. Just do it, you know, and follow your heart and just speak your mind. A lot of fans came up to me and said that they were very thankful. A lot of people didn't know I was Christian. Even I want to be Christian, so Pisces, and then like, because I'm not so perfect, you see. But that incident, then not everybody have to know. Then I feel like, now I've got a certain code of conduct to adhere by, you know. Yeah. But after a while, I gave up. Like, just be me. So I was supposed to be the secret, like, secretly help them. I cannot tahan, you see. And then we're all like down there talking, hey, you go lah, you go. No, you go and say. So I was like, I don't care really, I just go. But in the end, cannot hide anymore, just let it all out lah. Just let it out. I'm still very proud of myself till today.
My husband got into an online fight on Facebook with somebody about the Aware saga. I told him it was a waste of time because the guy was never going to give it up. And the only way to fix it was to actually fix it at the EGM properly so nobody could say anything. And because I'm a lawyer by training, I trained as a litigation lawyer, I basically got a copy of the proposed changes to the constitution. And I looked at the existing constitution and I looked at where
Article 80 of the current constitution states, the executive committee has power to authorize the expenditure of a sum not exceeding $20,000 per month from the society's fund for the society's purpose.
This woman, Karen Teo, turns out she was a lawyer, and she raised the question of expenditures. And then she asked, like, hey, you know, the constitution says like, I think, was it $20,000 a year or something? But this thing must have cost more than $20,000. How much do you spend, right? How much have you spent so far?
And she was questioning the new guard's expenditure.
The new guard's expenditure.
Now this is hugely expensive. The guards here, Raja and Khan, Deloitte and Touche, the good people from Bodo. As far as I'm concerned, we here are the members. We sit here in meeting and we decide what the expo can do and how much we can authorize. Have we authorized the expo to spend more than $20,000 on this?
When eventually 3,000 people turn up, and you know what the words will be? That this expo did not prepare for a meeting to hold 3,000 people. Now tell me, how would you have handled it? How would you have handled it if the APGN, that the target has moved up from 700 to 1,005 to 3,000. What do you do? Squeeze people into a room of 700?
And frankly, if the new guard had won, they could just ratify all this expenditure. But I think that in the moment, they didn't know these things. They didn't get it. They were caught off guard. They probably had no idea. I bet they had a sense that, we made a mistake, and we were caught out, right?
Once again, you missed the point. The point is not whether you can or cannot spend the $20,000. The point is, if you spend more than $20,000, you need to seek the permission of the general body.
Yes.
That's my first point. Hang on. I'm Mike Manchin. Secondly, you are not above the law. Just because you sit in expert position does not mean you. Very plain reading of the Constitution. I want to ask a question. In the 8 years that I've been as aware, I have been a proud and dedicated fundraiser. I have enjoyed fundraising and I have been behind many of the events that we have put on. And I am concerned, in fact, saddened to see the amount of money that has been spent on this event that could have been directed into much better causes.
For those of us who have been along and who understand the difficulty of raising funds, you know, and to be prudent with money, it's like, yeah, it was really an abuse. Yeah. Abuse of power and funds and people's goodwill and, you know, all the donors' intentions. Yeah.
Journalist for 26 years. I consciously abstained from being a member of AWARE because I didn't want people to accuse me, as they often did. Usually men, unfortunately, because they were being very rational. They would accuse me of supporting the story or promoting some issue or other because I was a woman and I was a member of AWARE. That was not true until I quit 5 years ago, and one of the things I did, I said, well, I should join AWARE. So I finally got around to it and joined last month.
I was in a position to make editorial decisions on a day-to-day basis and at a very senior level. In one meeting, I think it was Sunday Times, it was a Saturday night, and one of my colleagues, who's a true MCP, and there was a story about women and something, and they said, well, why is this on in the Prime pages? So I said, because this is important, and this guy just said to me, you're just saying that because you're a member of AWARE, you're always pushing their causes. And I said, you will take that back. I am not a member of AWARE. Yes, I am a feminist and I'm proud of it. And I have no agenda other than I'm a journalist and I'm looking at this as news value. I said, apologize now or else we will settle it outside now and we will settle it with our fists, okay? You want to fight me? Fight. And fight like a man. I remember, and he was so scared shitless. He's not very big, but he would never fit. I was fit. He thought I was using my personal biases to influence the placement of a story. And that was absolutely, you know, you can't do that.
And one of the reasons I joined AWARE, because I was keen to keep AWARE open and inclusive. I noticed that the new exco and the people who have served AWARE from all those years have both used the terms open and inclusive. But I hardly think that as a woman who, for much of my childhood, was told to shut up and sit down, I didn't expect to come to a grown-up organization meeting of women and be told that, to hear someone else being told to shut up and sit down.
What the long term, what that meeting did for me was friends of mine noticed that I tended to speak up more often at work. You know, instead of saying, okay, I'll talk about this another time, I'll just say, right, you want to talk about this now? You brought it up, we'll talk about it. If that makes you lose friends, I just thought, okay, fine, lose the friends. There was a woman that I'd known for more than 5 years. She and her husband were very, very kind to my second brother when he was dying. They would come to the house every day, pray with him, bring food for him, keep his spirits up. And they hadn't known him, really, except through a friend from church or something when he was going through his own struggle, trying to decide whether he was going to be a Christian or not. And it was... And she saw me there and she hugged me and then she said, oh, you know, this, how nice, come and sit with us. And I instinctively knew, because I knew the church she was from. And I said, oh, no, I'm going to sit with some friends over there, you know, these former colleagues. And I could see her face change and that was the end of it. So I just thought, okay, I'm sorry about that because she was a good person. This is the price of keeping to your convictions, and this is a price that I am willing to pay.
Because what I feel, and I come in here, all of you, from whichever camp, that today is the time to stand up and speak out, not shut up and sit down.
I'm male, I'm emotional, I'm irrational, okay? And I've made some pretty big screw-ups in my life, okay? Affecting loved ones and my family. I'm not proud of it, okay? I won't go into details. You just
set that up, right? Yeah, wow, it all seemed to come back. I mean, it's like surreal, it's like... But I still firmly believe very strongly in what I said back then, you know, even more strongly since those days in 2009. My name is Farid bin Abdul Hamid.
I wanted to say that I'm speaking because, like, men come up here and they say, I'm a father of three, you know, daughters and all that. Well, I'm a Muslim father with three daughters, okay? and two of my daughters are teenage daughters, okay? They're teenage, so they're, you know, at that age. And I'd like to say this was from the background that I was a police officer, I was a criminal investigator, I was a deputy public prosecutor, yeah, before I left the profession. Okay, I'm not saying this to sort of put my CV up there, but in the light of my work, when I deal with juvenile delinquents, adult delinquents, yeah, for that matter, you know, I've seen so much hurt, so much pain, so much fear girls have of being rebuked, of being told they're not worthy, they have to listen to men, fathers, uncles, and that made me very sad. And apart from the legal and criminal sanctions that I had to implement as a law enforcement officer, I felt that the real work that needs to be done is the kind of work that AWARE, the previous community, has been doing. Honestly, many of us who are police officers and prosecutors, after the dust is settled in court, the damage needs to be healed. And that's the most important part, yeah? Thank you. The thing about being a Muslim father, again, I want to say, is that Islam, okay, requires, demands, that we do not adhere to dogma. Okay, we need to find the answers. We need to have the spirit of inquiry. We need to have evidence, and we need to make the ladies of their then informed choices. All informed choices. And that's Islam. Okay, my understanding of Islam. And because of that, thank you. Because of that, I would be very proud for my daughters to actually go through the CSE program that has been designed. I regret being a father, okay, of these fine teenage daughters. I regret that they are not here today to see the spirit of the women standing up for their rights. And that has been my mistake, and I apologize. And I'll make amends. Thank you.
As a father, you know, now I have four daughters, not three. I would have liked for my daughters to be there. I think in 2009, they were 15 and 13. They would have understood the different points of view. They would have understood the processes of contestation for ideas. I think very important for young people to see that, and then to be able to, not just for them to experience, but then you need to talk and process that with them. Students in schools that are gay or lesbian or bi or trans who are suffering, who are being made fun of, who are traumatized, who hate themselves, you know, who are having an awful time, you know, and that's going to affect them in so many ways. Some of them say that I hate myself for being gay. And I wish I wasn't, you know. I say, I can relate to that. There are times when I feel down and pessimistic and cynical, but this process was really an uplifting one for me in the end. It ended with a lot of feeling of hope. I feel a lot more hopeful, a lot more optimistic. Hope in humanity in Singapore, hope that, you know, we don't descend to that kind of level of interacting with one another. Hope because we don't need the heavy hand of government to actually censor and control and shut us down. That was hopeful for me, that we were able to do that, and we actually, not perfect, but we did it. We pulled it through.
My name is Teo Yu Yen. I'm a sociologist.
I was part of that kind of general group of volunteers who were going to be seat warmers or, you know, go stand in line at the mic and things like that. It was a very empowering experience in some ways to be in this room where so many people could articulate the importance of gender equality, seeing the connections between gender equality specifically and democracy or diversity more generally. How do you conduct debate? How do you carry out disagreement? What does it mean to protect a secular space? What does it mean to protect a democratic space? From the time I was 19 to 29, I lived in Berkeley. And the campus culture at Berkeley was very much that collective action and activism are very good and important things. They're good and important things. Going there as a young Singaporean student, that was of course a bit of a shock actually, right? And when I came back to Singapore, in a way, when I came back to Singapore, but I'm gonna start crying now. So coming back to Singapore, I think, and of course I say this now, I don't think I was necessarily able to articulate it then, but I think I found I had to hide a lot of myself. I had to hide a lot of this stuff about social justice. I had to hide a lot of, I had to hide being a feminist. I didn't have people around me for whom this is also common sense. When I was in graduate school, I was in my tribe. I found my people, right? So the AWARE saga, that room, you know, in that room, I felt again, I felt, I guess, a kind of like relief, a kind of relief that there were these other people who actually share my values and who are saying these things out loud. That at least in those few hours, we were not having to hide, you know, our feeling that something is wrong and that when something is wrong, you ought to be speaking up for it. We don't have to hide that we think gender equality is important. We don't have to hide that gay rights are important. And we don't have to hide because we have critical mass. We don't have to hide because we have safety in numbers. We have safety, you know, we are not freaks. In that room, we were not freaks, yeah. I mean, it's when you are a freak, you mostly walk around feeling like a freak, and probably most of the time you don't think about it very much and how much you have to hide. But then in that moment, you see how much you've had to hide, you know. And I think we take for granted now how much more people are able to come out, yeah, come out on many of these different issues, yeah.
It was past 8 p.m. that Saturday night, more than 5 hours into the EGM. On the floor of Exhibition Hall 402, the lines of speakers had only grown. The queues snaked past the rows of chairs that filled the hall. More and more people were being stirred into sharing their opinions, their personal histories, their experiences with religion, with sex education, with discrimination and gender inequality. But all of a sudden, the scrutineers appeared on the stage. They had returned from the back room, where they had counted more than 2,000 ballots. Here it was, the result of the vote. Did the members of AWARE have confidence in their exco? Did they want the exco to step down? AWARE President Josie Lau took the mic. If she was nervous, she didn't show it.
No more comments from the floor. This is the moment you have been waiting for. The results of the poll on Resolution 3A under Agenda Item Number 3 is 1414, for yes. And 761.
They had done it. By a 2-to-1 ratio, the old guard had won the vote on all three resolutions. Margi, Corinna, Juhim, supporters Pam Wee and Robin Rayom, nobody could believe it.
When that first announcement came and they said votes for 1,400, you still couldn't be sure because you didn't know how many people had voted. And then the next one, 700, you could see it won by 2/3 and it was suddenly... I mean, how do you describe a feeling? You know, it was happiness, joy, and then, but it's also this sense of being one of many.
So it happened. Oh my God. So, you know, reliving it now is, I'm quite overwhelmed because it, I think it's that I've never wanted anything more in my life that I've worked as hard for, that I really, really, really wanted. And it felt, we were underdogs, so it was mostly my life has been easy, you know, compared to this. This was really hard, and we were going to lose, and we turned it around. So it was incredible. It was an incredible moment for me.
It was just kind of like this spontaneous, crazy eruption of joy, and you know, I could see some people running around. And actually, there was a lot of, at that time. I think there was a lot of running around looking for friends. Most people had been in Suntec City for a good 9-10 hours. So end of which, I got together two friends, we were all hugging each other in celebration and everything. And then at which point, one of them just sort of wrapped her arms around her breast and just went, ouch! And we all looked at her and went, uh-huh. And we're all still breastfeeding our babies. And so if you are sitting in a room for 10, 11 hours, you haven't expressed your milk, you haven't fed your baby, we were all severely engorged. The woman with a 1-2-month baby, she was like, seriously, guys, I would love to stay around and celebrate, but nature calls, I need to rush home before I explode.
It was only at the end of the day that they told me that the AwareSG hashtag had actually trended to number one in the region. And that it had beat Wolverine, right? We're like, woohoo, we beat Wolverine. Somebody tweeted, we need a t-shirt that says, what the f*** is AwareSG? Because it was trending so much. People were like, what the hell? You know, what is AwareSG? So they were very amused that we had managed to capture global attention for a very niche issue.
I can't describe the feeling. It was... the Singaporean, we've never experienced democracy in this way before. It was in front of our eyes. We were there. We screamed, we shouted, we protested, we agreed, we cheered, we booed, and then we voted, and then the result was in our favor. It was just like, ugh. It was really like, this is what democracy feels like.
I've always said that ever since that day, 2nd May 2009, if there was one day that I could relive, just one day that I could relive, I would pick that day. It wouldn't be my wedding day or the birth of my child day. It's actually the 2nd of May 2009 day.
Meanwhile, as celebrations exploded around her, Margie Thomas thought it might not be over just yet.
Madam Chair, under Article 17 of the Constitution, it says the Executive Committee shall always remain subordinate to the General Meetings. I think the members of the WEAR have spoken. And I think the gracious thing would be for you to offer to resign now.
Could it be? Could it be that in a huge anti-climax, the new guard would simply disregard the vote and carry on in office?
Strictly speaking, a censure motion such as Resolution 1 would have no legal effect if carried. However, the Exco would consider whether to carry on in office if Resolution 1 is passed. So we will consider.
So the new guard would leave the stage to deliberate. Former AWARE President Braema Mathi urged the room to be patient.
We have waited all this time. We will follow. We are bigger. Surely we can give the 5 minutes. So let us do that.
5 minutes passed, then 10, then 15. By now, it was almost 9 p.m. Nobody knew what was going on.
They disappeared.
They disappeared.
And we waited some time.
We didn't know whether they were going to come back. So there was a point where they disappeared completely.
Actually, it's like, oh, the fact that they're taking so long is actually a positive sign because they are probably discussing what to do next, right? Because like, you know, if they had been digging in their heels, you would expect them to just come back and say, them to have planned that and come back immediately and say, sure, but this doesn't matter and we're going to stay. That would be a quick one. So the fact that they're taking so long, I took it as a, again, you never know for sure, but I took that as a positive signal.
This is our last call. If anyone in this assembly knows where they are and can give us some information, we will be willing to consider it. Legal counsel, would you know anything about the whereabouts?
And then we decided that, well, we don't know if they're going to come back. AWARE needs leadership, so we said, and we put it to the vote, who's in favour of us conducting an election to elect the new Exco. And we already had our slate prepared, and so we went ahead with that.
So I'm calling now nominations for the President's vote. Dana Lam was nominated by Constance Singham and seconded by Lena Lim. Nominations are closed for President. Dana Lam is declared the President of AWARE.
With Zaibun Siraj chairing the proceedings, the new slate was chosen, including Karina, Margie and Ju Him, who would serve under President Dana Lam. They climbed on stage, beaming in their We Are AWARE t-shirts. And then...
We have come back and wish to make a statement.
They were back, the six women of the new guard. They stood by the podium in a tight, grim huddle. Josie's voice was steady and she held her head high.
The Exco, we note the outcome of the vote of no confidence. The Exco has decided to graciously step down and wish original roots
continue to contribute to the advancement of women in the political, economic, and social fields so that we would one day have 30 to 35% women at every level of these fields of activities in accordance with CEDAW. I wish you all the best, and I declare the meeting closed.
It was all over. It had taken 8 hours and more than 3,000 people. The old guard had won. AWARE had been restored to them.
It changed my life. And for me, it's still the life-defining moment of my life. I am still so moved watching this and I guess it represents a lot of the things that are so important to me.
I've been asked many times, right, what difference can women bring to leadership? And my experience of the EGM really showed me what it was.
The closest other experiences would have been as a journalist covering general elections, perhaps. As a journalist, I've had been involved in broadly similar situations, but nowhere near as intense as that. But this one is completely different. I'm right in the heart of it. I don't think it's something that any of us will ever experience again.
We have made a difference, and you know, despite you know people thinking of us civil society people as troublemakers and all that, right? I felt very vindicated. And I was like, okay, this is what it is. This is the power of the people. This is what hope looks like. And so it's always there. It's always there in people. So it's like, you know, then I think after that, I never experienced a burnout anymore.
I guess we haven't really sort of looked at each other and said, you know.
Not at all.
No. And we all sort of, you know, we're all pretty task-driven and we are. But, I mean, I want to say thank you for being such amazing people, right? And Margie has always been. I mean, we were put together in this. It happened. It was almost accidental, and we find that we were meeting almost every night. But you know, I never actually said how much I really admire and respect you.
Oh dear.
Yeah. she's always always just so calm and a rock, right? In with Juhim, I'm glad that we're still friends, and I'm glad we're still here. And Chinwe was always just, when Chinwe took over logistics, I don't know, it was just magic.
Remember, your twin sister helped a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, she provided all the tea and coffee. The things, yeah.
This episode is dedicated to the memory of Myrna Blake and Anne Wee, two AWARE founding members and EGM attendees who passed away in 2019. Join us next time for the last episode of Saga. For this podcast, we reached out to Kyo Soo Mien and the members of the New Guard. They either declined or did not respond to our interview requests. Saga is hosted by me, Bharati Jagdish. It was written and produced by Jasmine Ng and Kelly Liao. Audio post-production by Mocha Chai Laboratories, with sound design by Chong Sin Ying and Amelia Tsai. Noraina Sapari was our associate producer, and Bali Kaur Jaswal was our story consultant. Original score by Wei Shen Din of the band .gif, and additional music from the Free Music Archive under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License. Artwork by John Albrecht. Gwen Lim was our marketing strategist. We received editorial assistance from Caspian Paraskasis Narayan, Lim Tze Tien, Megan Tan, and a tireless group of interns. We're also grateful to Splice Studios and Neon Sound. Visit aware.org.sg/saga for bonus clips, links to archival material, an interactive timeline, character map, and more.